verses 1 through 14, and can be found on page 1137. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, called Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them, and they said, "We'll go with you." So they went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it, and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have just caught." Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread, and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead.
It is Easter season. We are studying these passages that recall Jesus' interactions with his followers after he rose again from the dead. And as Joe just read, this was the third kind of appearance or scene of Jesus interacting with his disciples here as they're on the lakeside fishing. The good news of the gospel of Christ is that he died and he rose again. And he himself has accomplished the redemption of his people. Isn't it interesting how these disciples are in this situation not seeking after Jesus? They're not doing anything particularly spiritual. But Jesus Christ appears to them and in the midst of their life, in the midst of their situation, shows up and offers them grace. The gospel that we believe as Christians is that we cannot earn any favor with God. We can't chalk up brownie points, have some kind of list of merits to say, well, now God ought to bless me because I've accomplished this and this and this and this for him. No, that Jesus Christ came to us while we were still sinners and he died for us. And therefore, we don't bring anything to him but our need and our open hands to receive what Christ has done for us. I don't know what your situation is today. Perhaps you may be carrying some baggage from the past. You might be feeling very disempowered in the present. You might be discouraged, not have very much hope for the future. But Christ came and he accomplished our redemption. He came and made a way that we could be restored in our relationship with God our Father. And so that frees us from the sins of our past. That they don't define us. Our wrongs that we did yesterday, the day before, they do not make us who we are. Jesus makes us who we are. And today he promises us his Spirit will be with us. He equips us. He enables us to accomplish what he calls us to do each and every day. In the future, he promises that all will be well, all will be made right, that death itself is not the end of our lives because it wasn't the end of the life of Christ, but he raised from the dead and he promises he will raise us up in him. This is the third appearance, and I wanted to just kind of review the situations where Jesus has showed up into the life of his disciples. We started the evening after Easter in John chapter 20, 19 and following, 19 through 23, where the disciples were huddled together in a house and they were scared out of their wits. They were just, the Romans have killed our leader, they're going to after us next. And they're afraid, and Jesus, what does that verse say, or that passage say? Jesus showed up even though the doors were locked. Even though they had tried to lock everybody out, Jesus still appears right in their midst and says, "Peace be with you." So the disciples are scared, and the next passage recounts one of the disciples wasn't with them, and this disciple, Thomas, was the one that was doubting. "I don't believe what you're talking about," he says. "Unless I see it for myself, unless I can put my finger in his hands and his side, I'm not going to believe it." And what does Jesus do? He doesn't say, "Well, since he didn't believe me, I'm not going to appear to him." Jesus shows up and he says, "Look, feel, touch, believe." When Jesus' disciples are scared, he shows up. When these Jesus' disciples are doubting, he shows up. When Jesus' disciples go fishing, he shows up. And that's the passage we're looking at this morning. The disciples are kind of wondering what to do next, and Peter says, "Let's go fishing." Back to fishing. Now, immediately when we begin this story, I've heard some preachers claim that this was an act of backsliding, that their faith was slipping, that they want to kind of go back to normal life after they had this mountaintop experience with Jesus. They've seen him die, and now he's walking around. He's a risen person. I mean, people cannot be the same if you see someone rise from the grave and is alive again. The disciples are trying to figure out all that this means. It takes a while for this all to sink in and settle in. Jesus' disciples, at least a handful of them, Simon Peter and some of the others, decided they want to go fishing. We know Simon Peter actually owned a boat. Luke chapter 5 said the boat that he owned, Jesus was standing in it and teaching from the lakeside onto the shore where people were gathered. So Simon Peter, you know, he hitches his boat up to the SUV, you know, pulls it down to the dock at the Sea of Galilee and puts in the boat. And, you know, Nathaniel, some other disciples, Thomas, say, "We'll go with you." Back to fishing. Was this a backsliding of faith? Were they just getting back to normal life and rejecting this extraordinary life? Or are they just doing what we do? We go to work. We provide for our needs. It's funny, those who think that this is a bad idea, Christians generally have a very low view of work and our Monday through Friday vocations. It's probably no surprise to you that I don't think this was an act of lack of faith one bit. There's nothing in the Bible that suggests they shouldn't have gone fishing. In fact, Jesus meets them right where they are, and he doesn't rebuke them. He just shows up in their workplace. So, good idea, bad idea? I think good idea at this point. I think that they're not acting out of doubts or anything like that. They're going fishing like you and I go to work. They're doing everyday activities to provide for their needs, just like we do everyday activities to provide for our needs and care for our families. So I think this passage in John 21, first Jesus meets his people when they're scared. Second, he meets people when they're in their doubts. Jesus meets us in our everyday lives is what this is getting at, I believe. Jesus shows up in your workplace, when you're doing your work. Jesus might show up in your life at home, and I think this Mother's Day Some of our moms, their primary workplace is their home, or at least it's where a lot of work gets done, right? The laundry, the diapers, the meals, the cleaning, the daily work that some people can say is not very spiritual and it doesn't matter. But I think Jesus Christ shows up even there. Even in our daily, somewhat remedial tasks. And this passage is calling us to follow Jesus even in our work. Even in our daily lives of fishing or cleaning, accounting for business, building goods and services, teaching children, whatever you do for a job, Jesus shows up from there. It's interesting, in this passage, Jesus' disciples are out and they're fishing, and we know from archaeology, we know that back then often boats would go in pairs and have a net between the two boats, and there'd be one net that kind of goes underneath the fish. There'd be rocks that they put on the net to kind of sink it. And there might be a second net that kind of goes perpendicular to the bottom of the shore. They're trying to catch fish with nets. And the disciples, it seems, are just fishing with a solo boat here, and they've got their net on one side of the shore. And in evening time was the time when fishing was the best in the ancient world. They're on the Sea of Galilee, and they're fishing together. They fish all night. They pull in a late night of work, and they catch nothing. Have you ever worked really, really, really hard and seen zero results? Have you ever labored and maybe you planted your field only to see it all get washed away or flooded? Or perhaps there are some mothers that tended to their children's needs day in and day out and day in and day out, and you're like, oh good, they're not going to get the flu because I'm keeping everything sanitized, and boom, sickness hits the house. Or maybe even a deeper pain of loving and nurturing your children, and they reject you in some ways. They don't honor you. Or they turn away from the faith. The disciples are working, but they're having a discouraging work day. They had a discouraging work night, and early the next morning, Jesus calls from the shore, and he has this question. Friends, haven't you any fish? Now, there's a few ways you can interpret that, right? Is Jesus like nagging them, prodding them? Failure. You didn't catch anything. Is his little probe a diss on their ability to be fishing out there? No, they answered. I can't imagine it was a happy no, right? Been fishing all night, have nothing to show for it. Jesus' question comes to them not to pester them, not to annoy them, not to undermine them, not to tease them. There's no ill intent here, even though some people could interpret that. This is the beginning of a conversation that will lead to fellowship. Jesus says, "Don't you have any fish?" And when they say no, next he's going to give them some instructions, a command. Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you'll find some. What do you know about fishing, guy on the shore? Come on. He gives them a command, and what happens? They catch a ton of fish, literally 153 fish. I don't know how much it weighed. But they caught a lot of fish because Jesus told them a simple instruction, do it this way. And they have a miraculous catch. Sometimes when you're working, sometimes when you're parenting, sometimes when you're relaxing and having a day of recreation, Jesus might ask you a question. He might ask you a question that seems like a threat, or it seems like it's undermining you. Perhaps, when you're working, something comes to mind and Jesus is asking you, have you witnessed to your coworkers? And you can interpret that as, oh, I'm just going to be guilt-ridden. Jesus is just telling me that I need to do better, I need to do more of this, more of that. Woe is me. Or maybe Jesus showing up in your home and he's saying, are you leading your children in prayer and in devotions? And you could interpret that as, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm such a terrible person. Jesus' questions and his commands are not meant to tear us down, to knock us off our feet. He's showing up and he's saying he's going to do something miraculous in our lives, and he's going to restore fellowship with us. The goal of this conversation was that they would both experience fruitfulness in their work and their labor and their fishing, but also they would come back to the shore and have breakfast with Jesus. Jesus' question, his command, his miracles are all aimed at restoring fellowship, all aimed at getting his disciples back to the shore so they know who he is and they can experience a breakfast with him, where they're having fish for breakfast, fish and bread, tasty breakfast, right? My father-in-law and I both like salmon for breakfast, and both of our wives think that's disgusting. We love this idea of breakfast with Jesus, having some fish over a campfire. Maybe for you, you can imagine bacon and eggs, and it's all good. That's fine. You can imagine bacon and eggs, or whatever you would enjoy for breakfast. Jesus wants to have fellowship with his people. And sometimes in the middle of the day, in the busyness of our work, in the busyness of parenting, our good things get in the way of experiencing Christ and his comfort, his assurance, his grace, or hearing his truth. We get busy and wrapped up in our work. We get back to fishing, and it's not that we shouldn't be doing work, but sometimes our work gets us in the way and causes us to not really recognize Christ on the shore. He probes us with questions. He gives us commands. He performs miraculous things in our lives, things that we can witness, things that we can testify to. Jesus has done this in my life. He has shown he loves and cares for me by this or that miracle. And it's all with the goal of restoring this fellowship. Jesus invites us to come and have breakfast. Breakfast reminds us of how we start our day. Breakfast reminds us of how we begin the direction that our lives will take in what unfolds in the rest of the hours that we're awake. Breakfast is that meal, right, that gives us the initial boost of energy to get out to whatever the day has for us. And so Jesus says, come have breakfast with me. Start your day with me. Enjoy table fellowship with me. Let me feed you. Let me provide what you need. The disciples have this great catch of fish, 153. And some people think that John used this to be symbolic because some scholars have done some digging and they found that there were 153 known nations in the world at that point. Jesus is reminding them that when they're fishing, they're also fishers of men. You remember that song, maybe some of you from your childhood? I will make you fishers of men, fishers of men. Remember we had this little casting? Well, Jesus and his disciples are throwing nets. They're being fishers of men, throwing nets out there. If you follow me, what does that mean? Jesus says, if you follow me, you're going to catch people, not just fish. And Jesus says through this that your work of fishing is a great analogy of how I'm going to work through you. I think it's how we know the character of God by the work that we do. Jesus said, I'm the good shepherd. Well, shepherds, that's a vocation, that's work. I'm the great physician. We all probably have a doctor that we know, and Jesus is like that. Jesus shows up and reveals himself in the work that we do. And I think today on Mother's Day, it's important to know that Jesus is the one that nurtures and cares and guides us like our mothers do. Motherhood is a reflection of the character of Christ. The church is meant to be a reflection of Christ's nurturing ministry among us. And that gives our jobs, that gives our callings dignity. Worthy of honor, being Christ-like, whether we're fishing or shepherding or healing or caring for our children. Jesus invites us to fellowship with him, to have breakfast with him, to begin our day with him, to receive the good that he has for us. He feeds us. He nurtures us. He clothes us. He provides our needs. You don't have to worry. When you were children, you didn't worry how the food was going to get on the plate, right? When you were children, you didn't worry about what you had to wear and if your clothes would be clean. Jesus is telling us we don't have to worry about the things in life. He will provide, and he provides, interestingly enough, through the work that others do for us. Mothering is an honorable thing. It's a godlike thing. So I hope we hear that today. And I hope we have breakfast with Jesus each and every morning as we begin our days. Hearing his commands, heeding his questions, it's experiencing miraculous things he does in our life. He invites you, he invites me to his table of fellowship. And he's going to invite us next week Sunday to his fellowship table to eat the bread, drink the wine, and remember and believe that he paid for our sins with his broken body and his precious blood. Hear Christ's salvation and hear his invitation to have fellowship with him today.